Welcome back to Via the Source, where you can get news about the entire NFL and, of course, the Miami Dolphins. Fins up, here's Steven, your host.
What's up, guys? Today's date is October 8th. I'm Steven Masso, and as always, you're listening to Via the Source. Now, I'm going to be going over the main headlines from this week 5 of NFL football. The Dolphins were on a bye, so they will not be discussed too much. There will be a bit of them towards the end of the episode, but this is going to be discussing the news from around the NFL, some of the main headlines. So the first thing I want to discuss is Christian McCaffrey and the game that he had against the Jacksonville Jaguars. So the Panthers ended up beating the Jaguars by a score of 34-27, and this was in large part due to Christian McCaffrey having just a huge monster game. He had 176 yards rushing and 2 touchdowns on the ground, and then he added another 61 through the air and a touchdown receiving as well. So Christian McCaffrey in 2019 has 587 yards rushing, 5.6 yards a carry, and 6 rushing touchdowns. Through the air, Christian McCaffrey has 279 yards receiving and a touchdown. So this prompts the question that is Christian McCaffrey the best running back in the NFL right now? And you probably saw the tweet that he has more yards from scrimmage combined than Todd Gurley and Ezekiel Elliott. So is Christian McCaffrey the top running back in the NFL right now? And the simplest answer to this question is yes, he is, because there's no real arguments to be made for some of the other guys. Now, I would say that Ezekiel Elliott has the more prototypical build for a workhorse back, and you know, Todd Gurley, what he did last season can't be exactly replicated because of his injuries with his knee. And then, of course, when it comes to Alvin Kamara, he can't really replicate his numbers because Drew Brees isn't there to help facilitate the offense and make it flowing all around. So there are a lot of things that are working against some of these better running backs in the NFL. But when it comes to Christian McCaffrey, there's just no denying that he is proving a lot of people wrong, and myself included. I said that just given his build and given his small stature in his frame, that he fits more of a role that is more of a complementary role, kind of a third down back and maybe a guy who is utilized more here and there. And that's what I initially said about him. But the guy is proving me wrong, and he could be turning a new page and allowing some doors to open for some of these smaller undersized backs. Now, Alvin Kamara too strikes me as somebody who would be more utilized in a third down situation, but now he is taking more of a pronounced role and is really becoming the only lead back there in New Orleans. So I'm wondering, is this going to open a new door for some of these smaller guys? And just truly saying that if this is our most talented runner, then we're going to rely on him. So this kind of makes me wonder about guys like Tariq Cohen. Now he is in a different situation because David Montgomery is of course going to be the lead back. But if he wasn't there, there's a real chance that Tariq Cohen could have had some sort of lead role for the Chicago Bears, just because I think Christian McCaffrey is really opening a door like this to some of the smaller backs. So that is my thoughts on Christian McCaffrey. There is no denying that right now, number-wise, impact-wise, he is just the best running back in football. That could change with the guys like Ezekiel Elliott, but when it comes to the other guys like David Johnson, Todd Gurley, Joe Mixon, Alvin Kamara, just the situation around them, I don't think is going to allow them to become the best running back in the league this season. I think this is purely between McCaffrey and Elliott as of right now. Now, the Jaguars side of the ball, it was another impressive performance from Gardner Minshew. He did have one mistake. He fumbled the ball. He was strip sacked and they returned it for a touchdown. But after that, he was all business and really trying to get his team back into this game. And it looked like they had a real chance at doing so. So Minshew finished his game 374 yards passing, 2 touchdowns. He was really finding a good target in DJ Chark Jr., who continues to be one of the top receivers statistically and fantasy-wise in all of football right now. Of course, I expect that to regress a little bit, but as of right now, He's somebody that definitely should be earning your respect. 164 yards and 2 touchdowns in this game. And then Leonard Fournette, after that huge performance last week with over 200 yards rushing, another solid outing from him, 108 yards and a touchdown. Now we move on to the next big headline from the games across the NFL, and it was the game that just happened last night, the one between the San Francisco 49ers and the Cleveland Browns. Now this is a tale of two different teams right now, because the Cleveland Browns are on a full panic mode. Everyone's been concerned about them since the season started. Now, on the other hand, you have San Francisco 49ers, a team that is now 4-0 is really proving a lot of people wrong, including myself again there. Now, the 49ers won this game by a score of 31-3, and they dominated this game, so out of respect for them, despite the Browns being the main story here, I do want to discuss the 49ers first. Now, this was a game that was dominated by the San Francisco defense and also by the San Francisco rushing attack. The San Francisco 49ers just on the ground, absolutely dominant. 275 total yards rushing in this game. Matt Breida, 114 yards and a huge 83-yard touchdown. And then Tevin Coleman, 97 yards on the ground and a touchdown here. So this could be a very similar situation as we saw in Atlanta for Tevin Coleman. I do think he could carve out a significant enough role to be fantasy relevant here with the San Francisco 49ers, especially since I consider them a team that doesn't want to force Jimmy Garoppolo to throw too much. They would prefer to have games like this every single week. So 181 yards, 2 touchdowns for Jimmy Garoppolo. He didn't look dominant, but he was a game manager. He looked fine in this game, and I think that's all the San Francisco 49ers really want him to be at this point. Now, like I said, this game was just absolute domination on the San Francisco 49ers defense side as well, in part due to Nick Bosa. He was just a force in this game throughout. He had 3 tackles for a loss, 2 sacks, and after one of these sacks, he went and planted the flag. If you remember, Baker Mayfield planted the OU flag on the Ohio State logo back in college. It was regarded as highly offensive at the time, and well, Nick Bosa, I guess, was really, really putting a target on this week. He remembered that, and he made sure to do it right after the sack and as well as after the game. So Nick Bosa, just an absolute force in this game. Now we turn and we look at Baker Mayfield, and on his side of the ball, it was a very, very defeated team out there. They just looked absolutely lost. It looked like a very similar script where he was running for his life. The offensive line continues to be bad. He was 8 for 22, 100 yards, and 2 interceptions in this game. And this prompts the question that was Baker Mayfield overhyped coming out of his really impressive rookie season? And now, I wouldn't say that overhyped is the right word. Now, don't get me wrong. He is playing very bad right now, and I'm not going to spin this in any other way. I do think he could bounce back, but as of right now, he is playing horribly. I mean, statistically, if Kirk Cousins was doing bad, then Baker Mayfield is just on an island of his own in terms of how poor he is playing so far this season. So, but was he overhyped is the question that I'm asking right now, and my answer to that is not really. I mean, if you're saying that Baker Mayfield was overhyped, this is a guy that out of college, I mean, he won the Heisman first of all. He was drafted first overall. Then he comes to a team that has been notoriously bad for years. This was a team that was systemically bad, that they seemed like there was nothing they could do to get him out of this rut. He takes over for them, wins that initial game, and actually does so well that he breaks the record for rookie touchdown passes in a season. Now, I'm not using this to say that Baker Mayfield's gonna bounce back, but this is the question. Was he overhyped? And no, this was a guy who broke the record. He looked very composed. He looked very tuned and confident in a very difficult situation in Cleveland. You add a guy like Odell Beckham, an elite receiver, the idea of him taking that next step and having an almost MVP caliber season wasn't necessarily a reach. Now, of course, it's really easy to look back and say that after all this, oh yeah, of course he was overhyped. I mean, it was only one season. The guy doesn't have all the tools to be a quarterback. It's really easy to say that. But at the time, it was a very rational thing to think that Baker Mayfield was going to continue on this trajectory. I mean, they had a balanced running game. You have Nick Chubb, you add Kareem Hunt, you add Odell Beckham Jr., David Njoku. There was a reason he was drafted so high. Jarvis Landry was a number one in Miami. All those tools around him, there was very little reason to think that Baker Mayfield was going to have a poor season. I mean, at least you would think he would have a season like the year before, which was solid, but to see him regress is shocking. So to that reason, I'm not saying that he was overhyped, but I see a lot of people out there just destroying people, the media, who were projecting a good season from him. And I want to say that in sports, you are basically predicting chaos at times. You cannot predict every single thing that happens, whether it's fantasy football, whether it's betting, whether it's just people like me on podcasts who are giving their opinion. What you're doing is having the most rational approach that you can come up with in your mind and seeing if that works. And if it works out even 70% of the time, that is pretty good. Well, the rational way to think when it came to Baker Mayfield was, this was a guy who was great in college, had a very, very good rookie season. They added more tools around him. He was in a great situation, seemingly at the time, that he was going to have a very good season. So to that reason, was he overhyped? Absolutely not. But is he playing poorly? Absolutely. But it's not that it was something that you could see on the horizon. He is playing bad, but it is very shocking to me, and I think it should be for the rest of the fans in the NFL. Now, we move on to the Washington Redskins, because the Washington Redskins not only lost this week, but they ended up firing their coach, Jay Gruden, after their 33-7 defeat, courtesy of the New England Patriots. Now, this was not a game that anybody expected them to win by any means. I mean, the New England Patriots have always been dominant, but now they're starting to be dominant on the defensive side of the ball, which is a scarier thought. They were very good last year, but this year, they're just almost unrealistically good defensively. It's almost like a video game, how well they've been playing. Well, that drew the final straw for the coaching here in Jay Gruden for the Washington Redskins. And this prompts the question that, are they one of the worst teams in the NFL? I mean, obviously they are, but are they a real threat to the very obvious tanking Miami Dolphins for that first overall pick? And to that question, I say yes, they are. The Washington Redskins are. And I brought up several other teams in the previous episode as to why I think the Dolphins were the clear worst teams. And I said the only real threat I saw was the Washington Redskins. And I think the New York Jets, once they get Sam Darnold back, they will be flowing enough to sneak a win against several teams. Like, they play the Bills, they play the Dolphins, of course. If they get Sam Darnold back, they have enough star power offensively and defensively as well to win a few games. I think the same could be said in a way about the Pittsburgh Steelers. On top of that, they have better coaching, I think, than the Jets. And then the Bengals just have a bunch of seasoned veterans. Andy Dalton is not a great quarterback, but he is average, maybe a slightly below average. If AJ Green returns, that would be a huge plus to them. And then Joe Mixon led the AFC in rushing last year. I think they would be good enough to get a few wins this season. But if they indeed start trading people away and start tanking as well, then they could be a real threat. But right now, the way I'm looking at it, it's the Washington Redskins who are the real threat to the first overall pick. And if they do get it, they could go several ways with it. I mean, Dwayne Haskins played poorly in his NFL debut. There's no guarantee if they get a new coach in here, which is going to happen, that's not the guy that he selected. He's going to want to have his guy. And if that's Tua, then they're going to select Tua by any means. And if they instead want to build around Dwayne Haskins, there's going to be a huge bidding war for that first overall pick. So the Washington Redskins do have a good chance at getting that first overall pick. They play the Miami Dolphins this week, and it has a lot of people referring to it already as the Tua Bowl. Now, this has also kind of started a little bit of a war inside Dolphins Twitter. I see a lot of people very angry at the media. And I will say, guys, generally, I agree that the media is overly critical when it comes to the Miami Dolphins. Generally, in most cases, I agree. But right now, people are mad at the fact that the media is not attacking the Redskins and the Bengals and the Jets for having 0-4 records and for not really being competitive in most of these games. And to that, I say that these are totally different scenarios between the Redskins and between the Steelers and between the Jets. Well, the Jets and the Steelers, they were not expecting their starting quarterbacks to go out. They weren't tanking before the season even began, so they're obviously out. Now, the Redskins had a very decent defense on paper. They drafted a quarterback, though it was a rebuild. It was very clear that they weren't going out there with the intention of being bad this season. And then when you look at the Cincinnati Bengals, Andy Dalton is still, in a way, their franchise quarterback. It's like if Ryan Tannehill was trotted out there for the Miami Dolphins, I don't think people would accuse the Dolphins of tanking. But what the Dolphins did instead was made it very clear in the offseason what they were doing. They further proved that point when they traded their number one receiver and their star left tackle, and then they even further proved that point when they traded their former first overall pick. It's very clear what the Dolphins were doing, and I think that's why the media in particular has an issue with the Dolphins. It's not necessarily due to the level of competitiveness, but due to the fact that the Dolphins were making it so obvious what they were doing. And that's how I interpret it. I mean, I think the Dolphins team is good enough to compete and maybe sneak a win here and there. The chances of 0-16 are also very real. But I think the real reason the Dolphins are the ones being called out in particular was because of how obvious they made it, how intentional it looks, how much of a conscious decision it appeared to be. Whereas with the Redskins and with the Steelers and with the Jets, it's just teams appearing to naturally crumble. And if these teams decide to kind of start selling their star players, there's talks that the Broncos might. This wasn't a conscious tank from in the offseason. There's been plenty of teams that fell apart midway through and start saying, yeah, we're going to start trading guys. It happens. But the Dolphins had planned this before the season even began, and that's why I think the media, in a way, is justified for singling out the Dolphins in this case. Now, I'm not saying that the Dolphins should be banned or the media's right that the competitive committee should look into this and take away their picks. I'm not saying that. I do think what they're doing is, on paper, a smart thing to do. I mean, teams in other sports have done it. I don't think it's absolutely ludicrous that they're doing it, and I think it's going to work out for them in the long run. But I just think that what they did is so different from these other bad teams that why they're singled out makes sense. Now, I don't want this episode to drag on too much, so I'm going to split it into two episodes. In tomorrow's episode, I'm going to be discussing the Dallas Cowboys and the Packers game a little bit. Is it too early to start worrying about the Dallas Cowboys? A lot of people had them as the favorites in the NFC. Does that still remain after this apparent beatdown, at least in the first half? I'll get into that in the next episode. I'm also going to be discussing one of my favorite wide receivers this season, and that's Cortland Sutton, who's having a tremendous breakout year, and I don't think enough people are talking about it. And I'm also going to be discussing some of the other headlines around the league. So guys, that's how I'm going to end this episode. As always, it was a pleasure to be your host. You can follow me on Twitter, that is at Shady Steven. You can follow the podcast, that is at Via The Source, which I've been using a lot. And subscribe to me on YouTube. It would mean a lot if you haven't already. I posted a video on there that got a lot of attention, so I've been really happy about that, and I'm very hyped to start uploading more and more videos onto YouTube. So guys, as always, it was a pleasure to be your host. Until next time, I'm Steve Amasso. This was Via The Source.